The following meditation is based upon an Old Testament text from the book of Psalms, the seventh song. This is a song that David sings to the Lord concerning his attempt to escape from his pursuer, Cush, the Benjaminite. The text, then, is the seventh psalm, the first verse. Lord, my God, I take refuge in you. Save and deliver me from all who pursue me. A person on the run creates an immediate and an intriguing spectacle. And even more is this true if a pursuer is made visible in the scene. Then, if more than one spectator is observing the scene, the storyline may change and develop in many different directions simultaneously. That scenario usually leads to an assumption of guilt. But the truth of the matter is, nobody really knows what's going on. Ordinarily, we would conclude that the people who do know the reason for the activity in the scene is the one at the front of the pack and those who are in pursuit of him. The biblical narrative that we're considering now, however, provides for an entirely different review. Here, David, the one pursued, is uncertain as to why this action is happening. There is a conscious uncertainty which is making it impossible for him to claim either innocence or guilt. A guilty conscience is a tormenting experience. But to be uncertain of one's own innocence or guilt is destructive. It is therefore difficult to imagine the burden of loneliness which David is being forced to carry under these circumstances. When David was a young man, he was in the employ of Saul, king of Israel. As David became more well known, he became the most popular personage in the land. His fame quickly spread. Consequently, his popularity stirred the wrath of Saul, who avails himself of every opportunity to exterminate David. Then Cush, a member of the tribe of Benjamin, invents a false tale that David is plotting to kill King Saul. When Cush reports this malicious plot to Saul, the subsequent drama which unfolds finds David fleeing and Cush, the Benjaminite, in hot pursuit. While our situations are not of the same dramatic vein as David's, it is by no means unknown to us that individuals often are on the run. Sometimes both the pursued and the pursuer are known to each other, as is the case between David and Saul and Cush. That situation is often wrought with unrelenting fear, nervous surveillance, and possibly a heart-wrenching regret by the pursued. Quite often, the pursuit is between a person and an invisible pursuer. It is also this fact that we must consider in the story of David. For while David knows his pursuers well, he is also hunted by an unclear conscience. Am I guilty or am I not guilty? Did I perpetrate this felony of which I stand accused? Where does that debate between right and wrong behavior originate in the first place? To feel the urge to define right and wrong guilt or innocence is to begin with a belief in a divine being, one who is omniscient, all-knowing. Wherever one wrestles with feelings of good or bad, right or wrong, guilt or innocence, it is indicative of God being already on that scene. Unless there is a God by whom right and wrong can be reliably assessed, moral judgments can be no more than opinions influenced by upbringing, training, and propaganda. Unlike the many people who thereby conclude that conscience is synonymous with God, David provides us with a more dynamic and, I believe, a much healthier understanding of God than that. It is true that God indwells humankind, yet God is not dependent upon human nature when it comes to a fuller revelation of himself to the world. God can and does act independently of human understanding and belief. The poet Frederick William Faber expresses it well. There's a wideness in God's mercy like the wideness of the sea. There's a kindness in his justice which is more than liberty. For the love of God is broader than the measures of man's mind, and the heart of the eternal is most wonderfully kind. Because it is not within a person's intellectual ability to understand Jesus feeding the 5,000, or to understand Jesus walking upon the water solely from a reference of our exclusive belief in natural law, it is somewhat presumptuous to conclude then that these events are beyond the realm of possibility. A biblical knowledge of God must never be adjusted to avoid offending our poor, atrophying brain cells. The belief in the everlasting presence of God must never contain the slightest hint that his presence depends upon suitable human behavior. David, the frightened, guilt-stricken, remorseful individual that he is, seeks to enter into close quarters with God without any empirical evidence of personal guilt or innocence. He surrenders himself to the investigation of who God is, and as a result he arrives at a profound knowledge of himself. The Hound of Heaven is a deeply moving autobiography of the poet Francis Thompson. As the hound follows the hare, never ceasing in its running, ever drawing nearer with unhurrying chase and unperturbed pace, so does God follow the fleeing soul by his grace. Thompson had made every effort to avoid God. He hides in art, in science, in deeply demanding emotional experiences. But the unrelenting chase continues, with the inevitable encounter approaching closer and closer. And then, "That voice is round me like a bursting sea," he confesses. "Halts by me now that footfall. Is my gloom, after all, shade of his hand, outstretched caressingly? Ah, fondest, blindest, weakest," God responds, "I am he whom thou seekest. Thou dravest love from thee who dravest me. Is the hound of heaven hidden somewhere in your restlessness? Or in the never-ending marathon in which you are engaged? Is your gloom, after all, the shade of his hand outstretched caressingly? That was the learned experience of David that permits him to pray, Lord my God, I take refuge in you. And is that not also at the very center of the story that Jesus once told of a prodigal son, who, having been on the run for years, finally came to his senses and said to himself, I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven, and I am no more worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired servants. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and ran to meet him, put his arms around him and kissed him. And the son begins his soliloquy. Father, I have sinned against heaven, and in thy sight. And immediately the father interrupts that soliloquy, and turning to a servant near at hand, he says to him, Go quickly, bring a robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet. And kill the fatted calf and let us make merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now is found. And this is the word of the Lord. All thanksgiving and praise be to God forever. Amen.